Hi, this is Big Buffett from Saxon. We're going to give you the right to rock.
The right to rock. Texas, you're listening to the Right to Rock podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman.
This is Genghis.
This is Ragman. And we have a special night for you, an evening with a featured artist. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So, that's a killer masterpiece theater music.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know how I did.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. I want to say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. English and Russian at the same time. I don't know.
Starting to feel very British. As I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest in Biju Adu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please listen to our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya.
Horns up.
Horns up.
Broken Heroes from like Saxon, right?
Bloody hell.
And we're talking like all English metal tonight because we're talking, it's like an evening with Saxon, right?
Fucking A, right?
That's what I'm saying, right? It's like all Saxon radio. Or it's not radio, it's like a podcasting.
It's unbelievably offensive to the English, isn't it?
Yes, you know, we have a video, we have a fucking video. Just a video, we have a fucking video. You got a fucking video?
You got a video?
Yes, we got a video.
I'm not even taking special patrol group with me.
What's SPG?
Anyway, guys.
One of these days I'm going to get a fucking pet and call him SPG.
That's what I'm
how
saying.
How have I not done that yet?
How could you not do that?
Special patrol.
So we like at New York, we got fucking English over here. New York. Yeah. It's our last show, San Salman, because this is an evening with... You already heard that.
We're mixing our own music.
Yeah.
And it's all made by hand.
Shit. It's an evening with Saxon because we got a killer. I'm talking killer, don't you know? Interview with Biff Byford. Don't get it wrong, folks. I did. Biff Byford from Saxon.
Did he take you to task?
You know he did. He was nice.
Did he jump on
totally
say,
cool.
You bloody
he's like, what a fucking twit you are.
You fucking twit.
I thought he was going to call me a twat.
You fucking
he called me a twit, not a twat.
He says, you fucking bender.
Bender.
Bender, that's what they call him over
at. What's a bender?
Watch like EastEnders or something.
Yeah?
The BBC shows, it's like a fuckwit. Basically. It's like, you fucking tosser.
He didn't call me a tosser, a twit, or a twat.
Or a wanker.
The T's. He didn't call me the T's. Or a wanker. He's a call us a fucking wanker. I think I acted like a wanker.
Maybe so.
A little bit.
In keeping with the show.
Yeah. I gotta do what I gotta do. I didn't have any, but I had no backup that day.
I had nothing.
Genghis fucked me.
No.
I'm just saying.
I was busy.
I'm just saying.
The check was in the mail. I was at a friend's house. I was sick.
My phone wasn't working. Was like, my battery died.
Bring me a small lion.
I'm a lion. I'm a lion. I didn't do it.
Fucking Mel Brooks fixes everything. Bring me a small lion. Not that kind of lion.
Oh my goodness.
It was a good show though, wasn't it?
Yes. It was awesome is what it was.
Over at the...
That place.
Yeah.
Stereo Live.
Stereo Live, yes, sorry.
It was like...
We've been drinking away
from this place. This place looked like a big, like, jam box.
It's weird. It's a giant box.
There's two speakers on the side.
Yeah, it's like a giant box. It's literally, the place is like, there's no windows on it.
No.
And it's got to be like 3 or 4 stories tall, at least at the center, you know.
And then on top, there was like this douche.
A giant hidden
button for the CD player.
And then you go inside, though, and it's just totally different. It's like this labyrinth, and you go into the center. It's actually not a bad thing.
Wasn't a bad place. It was like, I'd say it was a cross between, for Houstonians.
Right.
Texans. Other people.
Keep quantifying.
But Warehouse Live and House of Blues mixed together.
You get a nice clubby feel. But at the same time, it's
almost like an arena, too.
Yeah.
A small arena.
A small arena, definitely, yeah.
Very small.
I don't know what the capacity of the place is, but it's a good place to see a show. I would be happy to go back and see a show there again.
Oh, me too.
Especially, imagine seeing something like Malmsteen came through recently. He played at the House of Blues, but
he couldn't have filled
he could
this
have played
place.
There nicely. It would
you
have been
think?
A nice place for a show, don't you think? Because
I think it'd be nice. I don't know if he could have filled it.
But like you? Fucking, yeah, sure. Who played there? Shit.
I'm the fucking Elvis, right?
Hellstar.
Oh, we forgot he's English.
That's right. Hellstar played there.
Yeah.
And it sounded great.
Yeah.
Despite the usual opening act mix
true.
Issue that always abounds, that I always complain about. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad venue. And,
no.
Certainly, I guess to that night it wasn't particularly, much of a problem to find a spot to stand and enjoy the show.
No, forget about it. No, it wasn't bad at all.
Friendly crowd.
Yeah,
good location. I mean, at least for me, it was close to where I live, so I was happy.
Closer for me as well.
Yeah, than the usual. Yeah, going downtown is always a hassle.
Wifey was not complaining at all. She said, you get home when you got to get home. And then I misconstrued it as be home by 11:30.
Ah.
So, my luck. I tell you what, let's start from the beginning.
Let me explain.
I'll tell you what, before we even do that, it's time for a beer.
Okay.
So let's play some more classic Saxon, because this is a show about Saxon. Ah! Excuse me. There's so many great tunes. Ben's been around for... like 40 years or something like that. They've been around for a while.
Saxon? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So, tons of great tunes. The new record rocks, but we're going to save that for the interview. But you're going to hear some stuff. And I'm telling you, you're going to hear some stuff tonight. So, over here, over there. Anyway, let's play some Power and the Glory off my favorite Saxon record, Power and the Glory. Same title. Let's do it. Genghis.
We are drinking.
We're still in the Halloween theme, even though we're out of Halloween. We're in November. Interview was conducted in October. You know us. We're a little bit late, usually.
You know, yeah. We got this shit going on, but
we got nice things still. We got to do stuff.
Yeah, we got a nice black lager tonight.
Yeah. Black lager. It's a little chilly out here.
It's fitting. It's fitting.
Totally.
And it's called Hal.
It's called who? Yeah,
How is it?
By Magic Hat.
Yeah, by the Magic Hat fellas. And I gotta say, I'm kind of excited about what this is gonna taste like. I like a good black lager. Don't get enough of them.
Yeah. Have you touched yourself about it?
I'm telling you. Mean, because of this? Or just in general? Because I'm always touching myself.
Oh, okay. Mine's undone. Mine's uncapped.
Are they twisties?
No, they're not twisties. They're actually capped. Do you need a bottle cap opener?
A bottle cap opener? Yeah, I think I will.
Here you go.
I'd rather not try to take the skin off of my fucking fingers.
Oh, my God.
Let's get a little open up here.
Ah. Oh, wow, that's dark. That is dark.
Black lager is usually, pretty hefty stuff. We even got a couple of stogies.
This would be awesome with the stogie.
Exactly. And that's the nice thing. I find, even though it's not, obviously the topic... Had to catch that. That was trying to go off the glass.
You like the head, don't you?
One of the nice things.
One more episode. You know what happened last episode?
I don't. I try to forget that. I try to block that.
That was nightmarish.
I actually took a pencil, stabbed it into my ear in an attempt to remove those memories.
Fucking Elmo.
That dude was not fucking.
Well, between him and Chaz, that was a fucked up combination. I hear their voice. I hear they're living together.
Oh, really?
I heard that.
They're taking up with each other and said, you know what? I like the cut of your jib.
I like the way you look, kid.
You got a nice town. I like the fur around your mouth. No, but...
It's the best of both worlds. It's androgynous.
You fucking me up. Getting back to this lager. This is the Winter Howl, Black as Night Winter Lager. By the Magic Hat Brewery. Very nice. You knocked that out. Let me give you the description here. Born of dark and cold and snow in the marrow of the Northeast longest night, Hal comes in on wailing winds with winter weary eyes. Holy fuck, they really went nuts with it. Burning holes in sunless shadows. It in its darkened depths, our inner voids are warmed. What the fuck? That's some serious shit.
You look crazy.
The bottom line is this. Its availability is from about the middle of October to the middle of January. They actually go into the... I mean, it's a black lager. They go into the details here by saying the yeast is a San Francisco lager. The hops are Apollo and Hallertau. The malts are pale, Caraca, Cara, Munich, and Crystal. I don't think we need to know how to... We don't need the recipe for this motherfucker.
Yeah, we don't need all the fine details.
But alcohol by volume is 4.6. So it's not all that strong.
Oh, wow, that smells good.
You got the Juicy Lucy?
You got the Juicy Lucy,
breaking out the juice. We've had quite a bit of success in the Juicy Lucy's. Very fine little cigar. Sometimes, yeah, as I was mentioning before...
It's like a weenus, a little weenus.
Sometimes it's nice to find a nice cigar that matches up, just like you might want to pair food with beer or food with wine.
We got cheers to this.
Matching a good cigar to a good beer is a nice thing, and I think we've got just the right recipe. Let's enjoy. First impression. What do you think?
It's not bad.
It's got a nice
kind of a nutty even
caramelly
taste to it.
Nutty kind of taste. Yeah, very chocolatey.
I like it.
It's a good thing. I mean, after our last issue when we tried the Wake Up Dead, very fine Imperial Stout,
but
a little
bitter.
Strong, really strong, a little bitter.
Yeah,
but this has a nice, much more mellow on the hops.
Totally.
I found a nice recipe, by the way, for how black lager braised short ribs with cheddar bacon grits.
Oh yes.
I mean, there's the picture. Check that out. That shit looks good.
Well, kiss my grits.
I never had grits. Grits are good.
Yeah, really?
Grits are basically like cream of wheat. You ever had cream of wheat?
You're
basically
so like bacon oatmeal.
Kind of. Yeah,
bacon.
It's almost kind of like a mashed potatoes. Well, what about not a lot of flavor to
the German potatoes we did a few shows back?
That stuff was the shit. It's hard to beat that. That stuff was awesome. Well, we did a little German potato salad, but with beer. You know, as one of the main ingredients in the mix, and it turned out really fucking nice. I think we talked about it. It's combustion. I think you heard of it, but let's go ahead. While you hit that cigar, I want to go ahead and hit up the old recipe here for the.
Oh, it's nice, Holmes.
Is it nice? The juicy Lucy's.
Got the juicy.
Usually go nice.
Fuck yeah, I need some more of these.
But let's hit up the Howl by Magic Hat. Let's maybe do a rating. You want to start thinking about stuff here while I light up. Yeah, while I light up.
Toke it up.
Drink it. Tell me what you think about taste so far. First impressions. He said it was kind of nuttiness that you like.
A little bit of nutty. Thank God John's not here.
Yeah.
But, dude, the cigar even brings out the taste even more.
And that's
the sweetness of the cigar with the nuts.
And that's why it's nice to match a good cigar to a good beer.
Can I just say it? I bet you like the nuts.
We might as well get that out of the way.
Juicy Lucy and this Howl. Nice combo. Your turn, Gagus.
Oh, you're right.
God, that's nice.
I'm tasting that. Yeah. Nice combo. You get your cigar going, a Juicy Lucy, which has a little sweetness to it. A nice, short, little kind of a Churchill-style cigar, a little torpedo style.
I'm going to do a John for you. Mm-hmm. Is it salty?
I don't detect any saltiness. I don't know what you're used to.
I don't know what you speak of, sir. But you're more we've seen more sophisticated... Smoking our cigars, drinking our dark beers, our dark ales, excuse.
I'm not really foreign, you know.
I just do because it makes me seem more sophisticated.
Alexi Holmes.
Hey, we got an English scene with the young ones, right?
You're right, dude.
We got a dark lager, we got cigars, right? And we're like smoking our cigars and we're drinking our lager. Or like ale. Excuse me, not a lager. It's like, an ale.
It's like a bloody ale, you fucker. It's nice though. So taste. Mm-hmm. I'm inclined to go high. Maybe it's the cigar pushing it up there. But
I think it is.
A good
honestly, I'm not trying to bullshit. No, I think the cigar enhances the flavor.
No question about
totally.
It.
Totally.
I like that. Well, I'm thinking 3.5 easy.
I give it that, yeah. Oh, it was good before the cigar, even.
That's the thing. I don't think that it's throwing it too much off as far as that rating goes. For drinkability, though, what do you think? It's smooth. A 4.6, so it's not all that hot. The alcohol, drinkability, definitely pretty smooth. So probably another 3.5?
3.5, yeah.
I'm down with that. And then the alcohol is a low one. Alcohol is maybe a 2, because it's only 4.6. It's not even a regular, like, I mean, just a fucking Miller Genuine Draft is going to get 5 or 6.
3.5? No, no. American beer is 3.5.
Yeah, really?
In Texas, at least.
Oh, okay. See, I was missing more. I was thinking more around 5.
So I would give the alcohol, it's probably 3, but overall, maybe it's between a 3.5 and a 3.
You think so? I'm going to go ahead and go 3. I think I feel better with a 3. So as far as the overall,
agreed.
Yeah, I'd go 3.5, 3.5, and a 3. 7.3 is a 10, whatever. 3.3, yeah, about a 3.5. I can give it that.
Okay, I'm down.
Let's do with that, overall 3.5. And so we found ourselves another nice beer.
Totally.
Very nice. It's how much
totally.
It's done very well for itself. So getting back to the old...
We're proud of them.
Getting back to the old An Evening with Saxon here.
I'll tell you what, before we get too far, mm-hmm. Let's play a little more Saxon.
Definitely.
How about a little bit of Princess of the Night?
Nice.
A little old school for you.
She used to be an iron horse 20 years ago. Used to bring the mail to me through the ice and snow. I sat alone and watched her steam into the night. 90 tons of thunder lighting up the sky. She was the princess of the night. You saw the writing on the wall. She was the princess of the night.
Sweet show.
It's something I don't want to do tonight. I don't want to play every song that everybody's heard before.
Exactly.
I'm going to play Denim and Leather. You're like, why are you going to play that? You can hear that on any other show.
And you probably have.
And you have.
That's the thing.
I'm not saying probably. I'm telling you have.
Yeah, no, most definitely.
There's no mistake.
Exactly. And that's why, yeah, just like any other tribute show, you don't want to hear... You kind of want to hear some of the same stuff, but you mostly, you know, you want to hear some of the... It's nice to trump up the stuff that you don't get to hear so often.
Right.
Which is part of the whole process. You know, when you think of a band, let's say, for instance, Judas Priest, it's easy to trump out the Breaking the Law and all the classic shit, Living After Midnight.
And those get old!
But part of the stuff that makes Judas Priest as cool as it is isn't the same fucking songs every time. Every individual Judas Priest fan is going to say, yeah, but I like this shit off Defenders of the Faith, or I like this shit off of Screaming for Vengeance, or I like this shit off British Steel. Shit that not everybody necessarily is going to think of, and wouldn't necessarily, like if you were going to have a Best of Judas Priest album, I guarantee you, every hardcore Judas Priest fan will say, I've got at least 2 songs that didn't make it on the latest Best Of album.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And they're the fans. They're the ones who should fucking know what their songs are. And yet, if a fan talked to another fan and said, how about this song that didn't make it on the album, that other fan would most likely say, fucking A right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so in other words, we're fans of the band. We know what we like as far as the sound of that band. And yet, record executive X, who put this Best Of track together, Best Of album together, didn't necessarily consult us.
You think they would say bollocks?
They would say bollocks to that.
I'm thinking so. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't blame you. So, as far as this thing, Saxon, mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. Don't necessarily play the same. Yeah, every now and then there's going to be a cross-referencing. You're going to have a song that, yes, it's on everybody's list. But for the most part, playing some of the less known stuff that's still just as fucking good, that's definitely worth putting in there.
And I've been lucky. Yeah. I saw him in Germany.
year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And
was that with James LeBray or no? That was not.
No, that was Evergrey.
That was Evergrey. That's right. A legendary concert.
I saw him here in Houston. Or we did. And I've been fortunate. You're like, there's a lot of people fortunate in their lives. More than seeing Saxon twice in 2 years. To me, that's fortunate. Mm-hmm. I did. I love the fucking Saxon.
No, they're classics. Yeah. It's like fucking trying to say Motorhead doesn't belong in the group of best metal bands of all time. You can't ignore bands like that.
Well, Saxon's one of those bands that they're fucking... They're one of the founding fathers of the new wave of British heavy metal.
Exactly.
They just never made it on the scale of a Maiden or a Priest.
I don't know why. You don't know? Was their sound all that different than them?
I think that they were heavier. Commercial as quick as a Maiden or a Saxon.
Just let me ask this, because this is one of my suspicions.
Sure.
The themes, because part of, what a band, quote-unquote, stands for, which comes out in the themes of their music, was it that all that different, Was Iron Maiden saying, we're all about this, while Saxon was saying, we're all about this, and the kids just responded to Maiden's?
Well, put it to Maiden and Priest back in the day, and they were a little bit more, say... Taboo.
Okay. So there you
in
go.
In that, Maiden had Number of the Beast, which is, a little bit of that devil thing going on. And then Priest had Scream for Vengeance.
Right. See, Priest was never anything.
But it's a bit heavier. Well, Scream for Vengeance had Devil's Child.
I see.
But I almost think they were a little bit more forbidden, and Saxon was more straight ahead, just heavy metal.
Okay, and
I don't think Priest at that point really had a gimmick, but they had a song that was more commercial. In with You Got Another Thing Coming,
certainly, yeah.
Maiden had Run to the Hills.
So
Saxon had The Power and the Glory, which was a straight ahead heavy metal tune.
Now the thing about if I think about the two,
sure,
or the other two, that is Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, You Got Another Thing Coming. Mm-hmm. And Run to the Hills.
Right.
Definite, real good hook, melodic hook in those songs. Power of the Glory. Same kind of melodic hook? Had a good melodic hook?
Oh, yeah. You said?
Okay. So you would think, all these songs, generally speaking.
But it was heavier. It's a bit heavier. The commercial songs that were for Maiden and Priest.
And what year was that? Maybe around early 80s?
I would say 82, 83.
Okay. So.
When the Power of the Glory come out?
Saxon came out before that. So I guess what I'm getting at is, was Saxon then, for the same time that those other guys were putting their stuff out, were they just heavier? And the world kind of, quote-unquote, wasn't ready for that heaviness at that year?
I'm almost thinking that, because I remember seeing the video for Power of the Glory.
Uh-huh. We just blown
away. I guess that came out like 81 or so.
Okay.
And I saw... Saxon opened for Maiden.
Ah, okay.
And Saxon blew Maiden off the stage.
Nice.
So
it's always nice when that happens. You know what I mean?
I love Maiden. Favorites
and you're down with Maiden. But it's nice to see like the underdog, so to speak. Right. This other little band comes along and just fucking rocks it.
So you blow your ass off the stage, right? I'm gonna do it right now, right? So that's just kind of what happened. And who knows? My brother, my friend, and I all thought that Saxon stole the show. And if you listen, if you stay in tune for the interview, if your name's not Genghis, you'll hear where I tell Biff that in 83, well, I saw Maiden on the Peace of Mind tour.
Bloody
they blew the shit out of Maiden that year. Because they did, right?
Right. Power of the Glory was 1983, by the way.
Right.
So a little bit after that, and like you said, though, heavier.
Yeah. I would say so.
And yet, at the same time, you also said, though, still had a good melodic hook, just like the other two songs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they didn't have the melody, which I think, personally, that's what I think most people respond to. Melody. Something I can hum. Something that's going to stick in my head. That's why pop songs.
Now let's play something off Wheels of Steel. Little Susie Hold On. In a classic song.
We ought to make that a fucking one of our DVDs movies? That we watch while
yes.
we're fucking.
We will do that.
Because that's a kind of classic.
Done. Consider it done.
Bill Nighy, dude. He's gone on to be the man. That motherfucker, any movie he's in automatically gets better because he's in it.
And what's the Scottish guy's name?
Scottish guy's name?
Billy Conley?
Oh, yeah.
He's a badass, too.
He's pretty cool.
So, anyway, Saxon.
Definitely.
So we play a little Susie Hold On. We play you some old. We could play you some new. We could play you something borrowed, something blue.
But we've established, I guess, I hope we have.
We're trying.
In that there's space in the whole metal area.
Yeah.
They're not, I mean, they're not, look at Maiden. Maiden, if Maiden were to do a tour now.
Yeah.
Or Judas Priest, the two bands you mentioned in relation to Saxon.
Sure.
At the time. If they were to do a tour now, each of them would easily play a big fucking venue. Whereas Saxon, as integral as they are to metal, they're a big part of the new wave of British heavy metal.
They're not as big.
They're contemporaries.
Let's be honest.
Of the other two. Exactly.
Sure.
That's my point. Well, how come they aren't able to command as big a venue? Because clearly their music is classic, you know? And no less classic, apparently.
It's classic.
The shit was heavier at the time than those other two bands.
And I think it just never got to the commercial state. Or by the time they got to the commercial state, it was kind of fading.
Okay.
And the hair bands had taken over. It wasn't grunge at that point. Yeah. And that's why Saxon's still around. And they beat grunge, they beat everything.
That's why they outlasted the grunge.
Right.
Which shows, interestingly, about grunge, as much as you want to say, like my brother, for instance, grew up at the time where, to him, his music was grunge. He's all about
sure.
grunge. And that's cool. I don't fault him for it. Whatever. But the thing is,
he's mentally retarded.
But if grunge was so fucking relevant and badass, it'd still be around, wouldn't it?
Right.
Metal hasn't fucking gone anywhere.
No.
Iron Maiden still puts out albums that are relevant and still
right.
fucking sound great.
Priest
still
tours.
Huge audiences.
Kiss tours.
But I guarantee you, if Stone Temple Pilots went out on tour and Iron Maiden went on tour, you know, two parallel tours, guess who'd get the bigger fucking venues and the bigger tickets?
That Maiden.
It would be Maiden.
Yeah.
Yet, they've been around fucking three times as long. So, you know, say what you want to say about how relevant grunge was, but, you know, you don't see those motherfuckers pulling the numbers that Maiden does.
That's what I'm saying. I agree.
So, I guess it's interesting to note how other bands, completely relevant, Saxon, everybody knows Saxon, dude. I remember when I was a kid in school, and I would see dudes with a Saxon t-shirt, and I'd go, that's a cool fucking looking shirt. I don't know who the fuck Saxon is. I don't know what Saxon is. But I want that motherfucking shirt because it looks badass. I knew that. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that they could do that to a, you know, 10, 12-year-old kid who didn't know shit about it. At the same time, did it to you, who did know shit about it. You probably thought they were the shit back then. Oh, yeah.
Well, I saw them in '83 when I opened up for Maiden.
Nice. How old were you?
'83.
You bought, what, 15 maybe? 16?
16. My bro took me.
Mm-hmm. And then you were like,
I didn't have a license. And my brother, my buddy, and I convinced my brother to take us to Maiden. We bought his ticket. Mm-hmm. It was Peace of Mind Tour.
Nice.
Saxon opened up, and Fastway, on their first tour, opened up for Saxon. So it was a triple bill. Mm-hmm. And so we bought the tickets, and then all three of us were blown away by Saxon. We saw Maiden, we're like, they were okay. But then, the following year, the year you fucking went to Metallica and Armored Satan Club, and I tried.
At Cardi's.
We saw Maiden on the Powerslide tour with Wasp opening up. Mm-hmm. That was a killer fucking show.
That really fucking was.
The whole show.
That was fucking
Wasp rocked, and so did Maiden. The best time I think I've ever seen Maiden.
And which is so cool, because where were you? I was in row F, I remember.
We were about...
Section F or whatever you
were. We were probably right next to each other.
Fuck.
12, 15 rows back.
You didn't even fucking say hi. You son of a bitch.
I tried.
You didn't hear me. I was waving. You didn't fucking look.
You're like, you fucking... Who is this cocksucker?
That was quite a fucking...
I'm going to know him in about 5 years.
Exactly.
But fuck that cocksucker.
That was quite a night, though.
Yeah,
but,
it was awesome.
But anyway, getting back to the Saxon, though, I mean, it's interesting, though, how two bands from the same era,
sure,
same sort of influences, yeah, probably, yeah, same sort of general style, one can go this way in terms of history, one can go that way, and, you know, 20 years later, one's playing a club like... And I'm not trying to, you know, it makes, no, it sound like Saxon's this poor, you know, feel pity for this band, like they're just down on their luck.
But, no, look... In the
but they're
U.S.
In history. They're cemented in their history.
In the U.S., history, maybe. But I think in England, in their native land, I think they were like the shit.
True. And that's the thing. That is a America versus England kind of thing. England knows their fucking metal. They've got the pedigree. They respect their metal.
But I think Maiden and Priest, they made it a lot bigger over here than they did in the U.K.
True. To no fault of Saxons.
You know, no, I mean, it's no, just one of those I think things. They were just heavier, and then when they went more commercial, they, you know, they broke through to a point. But I think
so much of art, and I'm sure you'll agree, so much of art is right place, right time.
Right, sure.
And that's the thing with Maiden and Priest: right place, right time. They came out with the right songs, right music at the right time, and it hit for them. And Saxon was
I'll
doing
what,
a different thing,
especially with Crusader. That was the second. That was the record after Power and the Glory. Mm-hmm. Where they had a little bit more commercial success with a more commercial sounding song. Mm-hmm. So here's some Saxon Crusaders. Let's check it out.
Oh,
But it's not on the radio all the time. If you're going to hear anything, it's going to be Wheels of Steel, or it's going to be Dallas 1 p.m., mm-hmm. or it's going to be Denim and Labrador.
Yeah, all the classic shit that,
yeah.
that everybody likes. Well, so, I mean, you know, let's real quick, before we wrap this shit up, let's talk about the fact that two bands opened for this, for Saxon.
So we're going to talk about a killer show that happened a few weeks ago, or a few weeks to a month ago, mm-hmm. or in Right to Rock time yesterday. Happened yesterday, guys. I swear. In Right to Rock time. So we get there, and we're like, okay, we're kind of pissed. Because Genghis couldn't make it, but I was the guy I am. I'm the trooper, and I cared more.
Let's just face it.
I've been a Saxon fan for fucking 20 years.
And I will admit to you guys, full disclosure, if you said, is this a Saxon song or isn't it true false, I'd probably fail. I don't know. I know of Saxon. But I wouldn't know Saxon if it came out and kicked
Play me Denim and Leather, I could tell you who it was.
Exactly.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, and I'll admit it. I'm free to admit it. Sure. Because like I said, I came into metal late. Yeah. You grew up with metal. I got introduced to it late in my childhood.
No knock. No knock.
Right. And so I've come to appreciate all their places in the pantheon.
Sure.
I know that if you're going to say all-time great metal bands of England, Saxon's in there.
Right.
But while they're the headliners, we had a couple of opening bands. One I'd never heard of. And
remember, there were four bands on the bill.
That's right. We came in.
And we said, fuck
third
it.
Third band on the bill.
We're not going to get there until 9 o'clock.
Right.
So we walk in, and there's a progressive power metal band on stage called Borealis.
Borealis, right.
Or Borealis.
Borealis, yeah. Borealis. And,
they fucking rocked.
Canadian band.
The Canadian
on a Finnish label, as I recall, and they fucking
Lion Music.
They sounded incredible, didn't they? They didn't even have a regular fucking secondary guitarist, mm-hmm. right? There's some guy they picked up before the tour, and before the tour,
they found him on the street. It was weird.
No, but some other guy who let's be honest, didn't look like he fit with the band.
He did not fit. But he can play. He had
metalcore band. Yeah, he looked like he came out of some metalcore band, some nameless metalcore band.
Yeah.
With his look, but. Motherfucker knew his shit. He played fantastically. Had a great sound. And the band sounded amazing.
They totally did.
Matt, I think his name is. Because I remember because he had a cool ass name.
We met him. Him and Jamie.
Cool dudes. He had a definite Russell Allen vibe going with his voice. You can tell that he had that kind of sound that he said, this is one of the singers I fucking relate to that I think is great that I would like to try to emulate, and he sounded good. I think he was doing his own harmonies with, he had a harmonizing processor, and was doing his own harmonies. Sounded pretty fucking good for
they're
a live
fucking
act.
Fucking nice.
For a live act that I've never fucking heard of, I was like, this is a professional sounding group.
And it was funny when I talked to Biff, I don't know if it's in an interview, but prior to the interview or post interview, he said, because I asked him, I said, what new band are you into? And this was one of the bands he was into. He said, it's rock, and I like playing with this, right? I'm like, really?
Well, you fucking lie.
Yeah, I thought, it's funny, because we never heard of the bands. We're thinking, this local band's fuck up.
That's what I assume, because that's kind of shitty so often on tour. You're right. We made a snap judgment, because typically that's what happens. On a lot of these smaller tours.
Remember Mr. Big. That band sucked cock that opened up for
them. Yeah, I remember who they are, so we won't trash them by giving their name. And
we don't remember their name.
But they what does that tell you? Exactly. What does that tell you? It's like we tell you, which is typical.
True.
They come into, I don't know how this works. I'm sure this is some rule of the road that with a lot of bands at maybe some certain tier, some level, that when you go to play different places on your tour, in a lot of these places, a lot of these venues, maybe it's something set up with the venue or what, where they go, hey, you got to play one of our local bands and let them open for you or some bullshit. Which to me is like, who gives a shit?
And it's
I'm not trying
Syria.
To be a dick, but it's like, if you were that good, I would have heard of you, right?
True.
Isn't that kind of the point?
Yeah.
When you get to that level of goodness, then I'll start listening. And I'm not being an asshole, but it's like, you know how many bands there are that aren't at that level where I should start paying attention? Thousands upon thousands. I just don't simply have the time or the resources to listen to all of them. So once that cream rises to the top, that's when I'll start paying attention.
Sure.
That's all. And maybe that makes me a dick, but that's just how I handle it. I don't know how else to handle the sheer volume of bands.
Well, I fall into the same trap because I have the same opinion. And then we both walk in, we're like,
who the fuck are these?
These guys are too good to be local.
Yeah, and every new song, we were just like, for a local band, these motherfuckers are badass. So, of course, it made sense when we talked to them. It's like, oh, you're not a local band.
Yeah, exactly.
You motherfuckers are bad.
And they're signed.
Great sound.
Yeah, they're from Canada.
And they had a great, America's Hat, and they had a great fucking sound, kind of a Camelot / Labyrinth sort of sound.
Yeah.
Kind of edging towards progressive, but for the most part, your basic kind of power metal band.
Sure.
Sounded fucking awesome.
So, let's get the guys a taste.
Most definitely.
Here we go. This is off their debut first record. This is a track called Finest Hour. It's the first track on their new CD called... New CD? No, I don't know. So, anyway, they rock. It's cool. Check it out. Sound, you're like, oh wow, the production's really bad on this one. It's like a demo, and then it kicks into the actual sound. I fucked with Genghis on that tonight, so.
Which happens, you know.
Yeah,
and that's part of the thing. I guess part of maybe a good future topic. Part of the sound that you're used to for a band. Part of what you know separates a quote unquote amateur band from a professional band is a quote unquote professional sound to
sure.
the production. And obviously, when I don't have the resources or the money or the training or whatever to make that professional sound, you know, that comes from when I make it big and start making more money and can afford those people. So you definitely get a difference in sound, and that's what they have. But you can tell, you know, talent is talent. And you, if you got a good ear, you can hear good talent no matter how fucking raw it is. And
totally.
These dudes definitely have talent. Even with this fucking guitarist they pick up for the tour, who otherwise wasn't part of the normal, you know, band lineup, sounded like he fit in just fine. And
he was good.
Voice.
He looked out of place a little bit,
yeah,
but he was
visually
still good.
He looked like, who is this motherfucker? Yeah. It's a totally different band I'm looking at, like a little window into a different band. But the fucking, the music itself, the musicianship was right on. The good keyboardist was rocking it. Had his Camelot shirt on.
Sure.
So you right away knew, I get where you're coming from.
Like, yeah.
And the singer really dug just because he traded off leads. He was every bit as good a guitarist as homeboy who wasn't singing.
Totally.
And at the same time, he's still doing these vocals with his great vocal harmonies, like we said, using some sort of processor, I'm sure, for the live harmonies, just because no one else in the band apparently can probably sing those. And it sounded great. He had a real nice Russell Allen kind of
vibe. Oh, totally.
You could totally tell he's like, this is my kind of singing.
This is me, right?
Right.
I'm out here for myself.
And yet when
I'm naked on the stage.
Love me as I am.
He's like, I'm Canadian, right?
You bastards.
Right, eh?
and the fucking voice sounded great.
Sure.
Had a great fucking sound.
They're
soulful.
Awesome.
Good. And so I hope for big things for these guys.
Me
and
too.
We'd love to interview them soon.
And they will be, they've already committed.
Or could or should
they saw out. They were like, when we walked up to them, like, holy shit.
Excuse me, Randall.
Who are these two dickheads?
These two assholes.
These fucking pricks.
I know. Whatever makes them go away, do it.
He's look, who are those two faggots?
These mama looks. That's right. As was famously said many times.
Inside joke. So, no, anyway, they were cool.
Very
they
cool
committed
guys,
to come
nice,
out to the
always.
Show, so yep. We will talk to them soon.
Let them on. They may even join us in our annual, you know, zombie culling.
Who knows?
Because, nice. You know, the more help, the merrier.
Yeah, who fucking knows?
They can handle that Great White North zombie menace. They'll be out there with their swords.
That's what
like.
I'm saying. Oh, shit.
That'll be awesome.
He's like, take off, eh?
I know, he's like, take his head off, eh? But,
so,
but seriously, they were good, and then of course after
that Hellstar,
the venerable Hellstar, who was a Houston institution,
and they were great, but
here it comes, a little.
I wanted them to end a little bit sooner.
Yeah, they kind of went on, didn't they?
A little bit because, excuse me,
Jamie Rivera. Tell you what,
Jamie,
that little
James,
sorry,
or Jamie,
James Jaime is probably what I'm thinking. James Rivera, though, that motherfucker,
Jaime.
Oh, he's Hispanic, right?
That's pretty good.
That's probably his real name. But James Rivera, though, this little motherfucker is the Mexican Ronnie James Dio, basically, from Houston. And this motherfucker can belt it out.
Totally.
He was out and had a little mixing problem, as you recall.
Yes.
When
they
came up, most of his vocals, the first song or two,
they were
couldn't hear a fucking thing.
You couldn't hear him.
Yeah, and I'm like, but he, trooper that he is, he's that professional that he is, he's out there going, fuck it, I'm doing my thing.
He's been doing it for 30 years.
Doing it, exactly. He's out there just doing it like it's nothing. And, you know, remember what was funny is that we were standing back there and I kept looking at the mixing guy at the board. He was just like, I don't know what happened.
Dude, I don't know.
None of this is working. I don't know why I come over.
Bullshit.
Yeah, he was all freaking out. He's running around, jumping around, kind of throwing up his hands like, I don't believe this shit. Finally got the shit, you know, like, oh yeah, it's this dial up. And James came up and it sounded fucking incredible because I mean, the motherfucker.
And when he came up,
it's
where he's like, hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Or, hola, hola.
Hola, hola.
The bottom line is they sounded good. The motherfuckers,
they
know how to rock. Like you said, they've been doing it for decades.
Oh, yeah. My only complaint, though, was they played too long. And not saying anything bad about the band. I don't want anybody to think of,
yeah, that's your band.
You see, you love them, but. You want them to shut it down early. I want them to shut down early because I knew the times for each band, and I was on a curfew.
He had a schedule to keep.
I had a schedule that had to be kept.
Let's knock this out.
Exactly.
But
and so I'm thinking, guys, okay.
Okay, when are you coming home?
Okay.
But the and then so you got to see the Saxon.
So we saw I saw Saxon for the three or four songs, and curfew came, and like a dumbass, I didn't call home and say, hey, yo, honey, wifey, yo, wake up over there.
What's the situation?
Be happy that I'm calling to tell you I'm going to be late. That's not the way it works in my house, unfortunately. It's like, I want you to be home, and then, you know, you come home. Holy moly.
So, anyway, all in all, you would rate it as a pretty good show, huh?
Great show. Great show. Saxon rocked. It's great to see him back on American soil. It's great to see him on German soil. But great new record. Call to Arms. We're going to play a bunch of stuff in the interview coming up. And we want to thank you guys for tuning in, as usual.
As always. Both of you. But, you know, enjoy the interview. Hope you enjoy the Saxon because
It's live in color.
And it's a good fucking interview. And I guess until the next time when we can get our shit back together and get into some more normal kind of shit.
And we will do that.
Especially with the ensuing holidays. We'll try to give you some good offers.
We will do that before we do our best stuff. We promise.
But until then, I guess
too
we can
big.
Do nothing more but give you a big...
Honzo!
This is Biff from Saxon. You're listening to Genghis and Rackman. Honzo!
free from the iron fist. The price you pay, a deadly risk. Live no more in fear and shame. The hammer's gone, released from blame. The chains have left, the walls torn down. Sound of silence all around. Hear no more the screams of pain. Freedom now, the beast is slain.
Alright guys, we are live with Biff Byford from Saxon, believe it or not, here at Stereo Live here in Houston. Biff, how you doing today? How's the tour going so far?
The tour's going great so far. We've got some great attendances, more than we've had before. Been the West Coast for the first time in sort of 20 years, so that was great. But the album's doing really well. It's in all the shops. We stopped in El Paso yesterday for a day off, and there was a load of albums there, so obviously it must be out, otherwise it wouldn't be in the shop. So it's doing well. We're waiting for the first sales figures to come in, but it's getting a lot of airplay, and people seem to really be really psyched about this album for some reason.
Well, what took so long for you guys to do another big tour of the U.S.? Was it just the economy, or...?
Well, a bit of both, really. The thing is that our albums before weren't really released on a major label. So it was difficult for us to coincide the tour and the album together. So, you know, promoters aren't really willing to give you shows unless there's some sort of album promotion going on. So we delayed the album in the US this time to key in with the tour. So it seems to be working, actually. You know, but it's all about, this tour is all about the album, you know. And some shows we're going to have 5,000 in, some shows we're going to have 300 in. We don't really, that sort of thing doesn't really bother as much. You know, it's all about promoting the album. And if we can get to a good level, then we'll come back in next year and do some more dates and make it even stronger. That's the idea.
Well, what's it like putting a set list together after being in the business for over 40 years? In coming to the U.S., I'm sure the set list has got to differ from what you're doing in Europe. Are you guys just concentrating a lot on the new record and then throwing in some classics, or how did you guys approach putting a set list together?
We're playing six songs off the new album. Other shows we're not. Just depends what the curfew is. Tonight we're only scheduled to play an hour and 15, which is like, you know, not very long for Saxon. We usually play a minimum 2 hours. So we'll chop around it tonight, but we always basically come back to the same big hits. You know, in the end, people want to hear Crusader and Denim and Leather and Princess of the Night. You know, unfortunately, we have so many big songs from the 80s that are sort of in people's DNA, you know. We have to play them, so... But we're trying to mix it up on this tour. We're playing a song off from that last album and a song from the album before, but it's all down to how long we get to play, yeah? I mean, there's seven bands on here tonight in Houston, so, you know, we won't be given as much time as we usually like. But we'll stick in as many as we can. I'll just stop talking.
Well, I got to say, I was bummed to hear that there were so many bands because I was hoping for more Saxon. Is that happening a lot on this tour, or is it just kind of random stops?
Just happened tonight and yesterday, actually. I think they're just trying to get ticket sales up, you know. It's fair enough, you know. It's not our strongest market in Texas, Houston, that San Antonio is. Dallas is pretty good. So, you know, we've been doing quite big walk-ups. So people are traveling to see us, you know. So, it should be great. It should be great.
Well, guilty pleasure of mine in this record I really discovered you guys on was Power in the Glory. Anything off that tonight?
Yeah, we're featuring that one quite a bit, yeah. We'll have a couple of songs off that album.
The Eagle Has Landed?
Probably not Eagle Has Landed. But we could do. I'll talk to the boys, see if I can put it in for you. We'll be right back. But I mean, three songs off one album is a bit much. So we'll see. I mean, we've been playing Pound the Glory, which is a killer track.
Oh yeah.
And you know, This Town Rocks was really one of, you know, it was really our biggest hit in America, with This Town Rocks. So usually we do that one.
Let's talk about the new record. It is awesome. And that's the thing about Saxon. You guys are fairly consistent. You know, every record, you know you're going to get a good record. One may be better than another, but this new one seems like it's a good mix of classic Saxon along with some of the more modern stuff you guys have done over the last few years. Was that a conscious effort when you guys went in to write this record?
Well, we're always trying to make outstanding records. What I wanted to do with this album is, when we first set out to make it, before we had any producers or anything involved, we wanted to get the drum kit with no samples for a start. So it was basic live sounds with Nigel hammering away and the bass guitar. That's what we wanted. That's what we got, really, and everything grew from there. So the basic rhythm section of the album, the basic tracks, are all recorded in one take in the studio, basically. You know, we tried a few takes, obviously, of different things, but we didn't stop and start again, and we didn't chop anything to pieces on Pro Tools yet. We used Pro Tools as an analog machine, just recording things. So that's a big change. And when Toby came in, my friend, you know, he's a huge fan of the old Saxon style, and he wanted me to write lyrics in that style a little bit more, which I did, really. I went back into that sort of zone of, you know, working class, stand up and be counted, surviving against the old ballad of the working, back in second. So I put myself back in that sort of zone, and that's really, it's a bit of a special album for us, really. It's got a real big spirit of the 80s, but a really great modern feel to it as well.
Agreed. I really dig the track Call to Arms, the title track.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about that track is you have the regular track and then you have an orchestrated version at the end as a bonus track. And I got to say, I think I like the orchestrated version. I think it's almost more powerful than the original track. What made you guys think to do that?
The telegram came today. It's taking me far away. Away from the ones I love. I put my faith in God above.
Well, the thing is, we're doing quite a few of our songs. We're orchestrating them. We're having them scored for an orchestra. And we've already done Crusader and a couple of other things. And I thought this might be a great song for an orchestra bass. So we had it done. And it came back, it was so great, you know, it sounded really... It's a bit... I mean, the original version is quite sad. Whereas the orchestra, it's a bit more majestic, you know, it's a bit more... You know, you feel the power of the war really more. The record company wanted it as a bonus for something else, but I said, no, we'll give it away. You know, we'll let people make a choice of how it goes. And I think it's a fantastic example of an orchestra working great with a rock band. That's what I wanted to put it on for, because so many stuff with orchestras sounds really wimpy and lame. Whereas I wanted to show people that, you know, you can write a really, you know, like a metal ballad, basically, and have orchestra on it, and it does sound great. You know?
I call it the goosebump track, because it kind of gets the hairs raising on top of your arms.
Yeah, and it's a song, you know, it's a song about the military, obviously. It's set in the First World War. If the song resonates across all wars, you know, Afghanistan or anywhere, it's a song about a soldier, you know, reading letters from his wife and... or his loved ones and just living with death, really. That's what the song's about.
Well, you've wrote another anthem back in 79. I know I'm going to see fists pumping in the air for that one tonight.
Yeah.
Were you saying we got to get another anthem like Denim and Leather? Or?
I just wanted to. It's all about that spirit thing. You know, that's a particular song. I wanted it to be like Denim and Leather Revisited. And, you know, I had the idea to bring in the audience again like we did in 1981. It worked great. You know, everything worked for it. And the song connects the 80s and the millennium perfectly, really. It's a song about old fan ball through that era. So, yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Well, another killer track, and that's this whole record. It's a very solid record for you guys, is When Doomsday Comes, which is, to me, I heard a little Purple/Zeppelin kind of vibe.
Yeah. The main riff, Nigel wrote that on keyboards. So,
oh, wow.
You know, we are aware that it's very similar to Perfect Stranger and Zeppelin. We could bring something else to it. You know, I think it's Tchaikovsky, but it's a classical piece, really. Mars, Gustav Holst. So, I like it. But, yeah, it just tippets out to those bands, yeah, definitely.
Is there a track on the CD that, when you guys were finished recording, that you said, I can't wait to get out there and play that?
Hammer of the Gods is one of those songs, I think. Hammer of the Gods is just classic Saxon.
Oh, yeah.
Feel, you know, from beginning to end. And it has modern elements in it, you know, that Doug and Neil brought to the band. And it has the classic Paul Quinn riff that starts it.
Other than the new album for a second, and this is I've been dying here. I've been trying to get your Heavy Metal Thunder DVD for months.
You won't get it.
There's been some. It's not our product yet. It's a company that made it. And we were involved in it, but not in a financial sense. So they've been having some distribution problems within the company. So they're trying to sort it out now. But I think they are missing a fantastic opportunity, because it is fantastic piece of work, actually. And it tells a great story of the band, the history of the band. Funny, sad, happy. And you know, for people who've read my book, it's a perfect, you know, thing to have to both things, really. Put together, great.
So they have a bunch of legal stuff to iron out, then hopefully a more wider release.
A bit, you know, they're quite new to it. They did a Dylan DVD. Uh-huh. I think they sold it to Universal, but I just think they're looking for a big distributor to buy it. Really.
I can't wait to see it. I've been bugging everybody I know to try to get it.
You won't get it. They gave us 200 on the European tour. We sold them in about 5 days. So, you know. I think it would be quite a guess if they had it out there.
Well, one thing about Saxon Records over the last few years, you guys have usually thrown in something a little more for the fans. I know I've got a record that came with a live DVD. The new one comes with a live show from Donington from 80. What made you guys dig through the archives to get that together?
Well, again, we found the tape after 30 years in an old manager's attic.
Wow.
There's 7 tapes, actually. One of the tapes was the Donington recording. There aren't bootleg versions of it out, but that's what it is. It's a bootleg. It's on a cassette, yeah. So I wanted to remix the... You know, we put it on the machine after 30 years. Sounds fantastic. So, again, I just wanted to give the fans something. A snapshot of the 80s, you know. 78,000 people right there at the beginning of that new wave of British heavy metal thing. And the new album, they go together, they're a companion, really. So I like it. And, you know, the bootleg's longer because the tape ran out through the heads. Yeah.
Oh.
So that's why there's one song less on this version than the bootleg version. It's obviously in the mobile, I think it was Rolling Stones mobile that was recording it, and it just ran out. Yeah.
Well, you know, bands like Saxon, Maiden, Priest are getting up there. I mean, you guys have been beating the streets for 40 years, rocking us. Are there any bands today that kick your ass? You think these guys are going to carry the torch once we're done?
Well, there's quite a few bands. I mean, I quite like Black Spiders. They're a great band. If you've heard of them, yeah. A band called Sword, pretty good. Crimes of Passion, the guys that are supporting us on tour. Vanderburst. These young bands are all set in that 70s, 80s era, yeah. They have to be a little bit careful that they don't totally copy those bands, but just bring something to it. I really like a band called Bullet, who are like a mixture between AC/DC, Saxon, Judas Priest, except, you know, they're right in there. The guys have got a voice like Udo. So there are a lot of young bands around that are sort of carrying the torch and the flag, but whether they'll break through with a massive song. You know, I keep telling all these young bands that we meet, it's all about the song that has to connect with an audience or a generation of people. That's what Nirvana did, you know, it's the same thing. It's what we did. The Animal Leather, Wheels of Steel, all connected with a, you know, a massive amount of people. Number of the Beast, you know, Run to the Hills, you know, Living After Midnight.
It's
not go again. No. Endless, really. So many great songs from the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
That connected with so many, fans. And they're still there because the songs resonate even now, you know.
I gotta say, I feel kind of bad for some of these newer bands because back in the day, there were record stores. There's no record stores anymore. Everything's digital, and it's so hard for a newer band to break.
It's the internet, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the bands that have done the best, younger bands that have done the best, are probably Airborne. They came from nowhere and did really well. You know, a lot of it from on the internet. Not even from just touring and playing gigs and clubs, but their energy and fire, you know, inspired people. So, you know, they went quite big quite quickly.
They're good guys. We've talked to them here on the show before. I got to ask you, we'll wrap up here, but if you could pick, new album excluded, what do you think the strongest Saxon record you've ever done is?
It's difficult to assess strength of an album because you can go on album sales or you can go on what
your favorite
on the album.
Your personal favorite.
I mean, I think maybe, you know, the three periods really. I love sort of Strong Arm the Law. It's a close run thing in the 80s between Strong Arm the Law and Denim and Leather. You know, they're both fantastic albums. In the sort of middle period, I think Solid Ball of Rock was one of our massive comeback albums in Europe. And again, I love Metalhead because that brought us to a newer audience, especially in Europe, brought us to a younger audience because it was much darker. But I think it's hard to pick from the last five or six, you know, they've all been great. I'm going to have to go with the new one because I think the musicianship on it's outstanding. You know, I think the band played some of their best stuff on the song.
Agreed. It's a really strong record. My guilty pleasure, I told you, is Power of the Glory. That's when I discovered you. Read with the video.
A lot of people discovered us on the Power of the Glory. I mean, that was my maiden tour. And, you know, Peace of Mind, Power of the Glory, and the Fast Way album. All those albums did really well, you know. And we just said that we didn't carry on with that tour as long as it went. But we did half of the tour. And that's another story. But, you know, it was a great period for us. And I think Power and the Glory, Crusader, are probably the most popular point we were at in America, actually.
Well, I saw you on the tour with Maiden on Peace of Mind. I love Maiden, but you guys kicked their ass here in Houston.
Well, you know, second on's a great position. Yeah, you know, it is a great position.
I'll never forget, because at the end of the show, Paul, they're ramming their guitars into the amps.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, holy shit, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen, man. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And that's one thing about Saxon. You guys always deliver a great live show. Going 40 years in, what motivates you? Is it just the metal, the music? Or?
Passion for the music, you know. And, we're very creative. We've still got mountains to climb, you know. Hopefully they're hills now, not mountains. But, you know, we're it's like America, you know. We're still trying to, you know, we're still trying to get airplay. We're still trying to get, you know, people into the band. So for us, it's quite important. You know.
Agreed. Well, Biff, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day to visit with us here on therighttorock.com. Is there something else you would like to tell the fans before we let you go?
Yeah, never surrender.
One last question. I got to ask you your most Spinal Tap moment. You guys have been doing it for 40 years.
I think all people alive on the planet have Spinal Tap moments. I don't really know, really. They're hard to tell because they happen so quickly, don't they? I mean, you know, we've all been lost under the stage somewhere. And, you know, I think one of the best ones was... We had wasn't that long ago, it was on an American tour, and we had a new bus driver that night, and we were pretty drunk on the bus, and I think the tour manager and Paul Quinn got off the bus to get some like goodies out the truck stop, and driver got back on and said to us, "Are we ready to go?" And we went, "Yeah, go." So we went, and we drove from. We drove from, I think it was Albuquerque to San Antonio. And it wasn't till the next morning we figured we'd left them in the truck stop yet. And they were just there in shorts and no clothes. It was crazy. So they had to fly to San Antonio, but the problem is their ID was on the bus yet. So you know what it's like, you can't do anything without ID. So it was a bit of a struggle, but it was we laughed about it later. But there was no mobile phones, you know, there was only like pages.
Yeah.
And the guy that had the page, he was just comatose drunk. And when he woke up in the morning, he had about 50 pages, you know, on his phone. But he got there. But that's quite funny. I mean, that's total Spinal Tap. Leaving the tour manager and the guitarist and the truck stop. Yeah.
Well, rumor had it back in the day that the Michael McKean and those guys followed you guys around for a little bit of insight on their
baby. Bass player, actually. They didn't follow the band. They met the bass player. I think he modelled his look. With the moustache and everything on Dawson. But I can't ever remember him following us around, I must say. But there's a lot of bands in that film. It's a great film.
Oh, yeah. Well, Biff, it was an honor to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the RightToRock.com and the Genghis and Ragman show. Take care and thank you very much.
Yeah.
Good show tonight.
Ragman.
And you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G., who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.